Today we're going to start up with hematologic disorders. We're going to talk about blood cell counts. We're going to talk about red blood cells and white blood cells and how to interpret patient labs. So before we talk about that, a quick review of the anatomy and physiology of blood. So the function of blood is to deliver substances that are needed for cellular metabolism. So those substances include water, glucose, oxygen, and some other stuff. Also transport of waste substances out of the body. So what's the major waste substance in the body? Well, it is the number one waste substance in the body. Water. Good. All right. Takes water to the kidneys. And the number two is carbon dioxide, and it takes carbon dioxide to the lungs. Also, is active in defense against invading organisms and injury. It is the transportation system that your immune system uses to get to the site of inflammation. And then it also is responsible for acid-base balance. All right, composition of blood. Blood is what we call a colloid suspension. No, suspension. Oh, sorry, it is a suspension in a colloid solution, yes. Okay, so suspension. What does suspension mean? Who here likes orange juice? With pulp. All right, so what do you have to do before you drink orange juice? Why do you have to shake it up? Because there's stuff floating in it, and it'll all settle to the bottom, right? All right, now, your blood has stuff floating in it. What is that stuff called? Cells, yes. Cells. Red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets. We sometimes call those formed elements. They are things that do not dissolve in water, but they float in the blood. And if we take a sample of blood and we let it sit for a while, what will happen to those formed elements? They'll settle to the bottom. Is there any way that we can speed up that settling process? Yeah, we put them in a centrifuge, spin it, and all of those formed elements will go to the bottom much quicker. Now, the water part of blood is called plasma. Plasma is about 91% to 92% water, and then 8% solids. And these solids are dissolved in the water. So we have things like protein, the number one of which is albumin, the second of which is globulins. And what type of globulins in particular? Immunoglobulins or antibodies. Then we have clotting factors. And the number one clotting factor in terms of volume in your blood is fibrinogen. And in terms of overall blood content, albumin is number one at about 55 to 60%. Immunoglobulins are number two at about 40%. And clotting factors, fibrinogen, is 4%. So once you get beyond that, no other protein has a full percent. They're all like fractions of percentages. Complement enzymes and other things. Then we have some organic stuff. We have fats, phospholipids, cholesterol, glucose, nitrogenous substances like urea, uric acid, creatinine, and other stuff. And then we have some inorganic minerals. What's the number one inorganic mineral in your body, in the blood? The number one inorganic mineral in your blood. Nope. That's in the cell. In the plasma, should I say. Number one inorganic mineral in your plasma. Sodium. Sodium? Yeah, sodium. You already knew that, though. You did. Now, the formed elements, the cells and platelets, are about 45 to 50% of the volume of blood. So if we take a little sample of blood and we let it settle or we spin it in a centrifuge, about 45 to 50% of the volume will be taken up by cells and platelets. Here's our plasma protein breakdown. Now, the formed elements. The number one formed element is erythrocytes, better known as red blood cells. Then we have leukocytes, or white blood cells, and then platelets. all of them have a finite lifespan. They don't live forever, and they need to be replaced periodically. They also need to be removed from the system. Hematopoiesis is the process by which we create new red blood cells. And where does hematopoiesis occur? In the bone marrow. And you're going to have a question on that on your final. I can just feel it. What is the chemical that drives hematopoiesis? What tells your bone marrow, hey, produce some more blood cells? Do you know any other poiesis terms? If poiesis is production, hemato is blood production, do we know anything that would make it produce red blood cells? Erythropoiesis. So erythropoiesis is produce red blood cells. What secretes erythropoiesis? You guys should have gotten this in AMP 2, you know. You probably did, you just forgot. So what produces erythropoiesis? What's in charge of the volume of blood? What organ? Say it again? Kidneys. So what do you think is responsible for production of red blood cell? Kidneys. Kidneys produce erythropoiesis, which in turn tells the bone marrow to produce more blood. So let's talk about erythrocytes for a moment. In a deciliter of blood, which is 10 cc's, you have approximately 5 million red blood cells. That's a lot, right? Now, some people a little more, some people a little less, but about 5 million or so on average. Primarily responsible for tissue oxygenation. Why are they responsible for tissue oxygenation? What do they have? Say again? They carry the oxygen, but why do they carry oxygen? Because they have a substance called hemoglobin. They live for about 120 days, and the hemoglobin is approximately 15 grams of it in a deciliter of blood. There are a couple different kinds of hemoglobin. Hemoglobin A stands for adult hemoglobin, and it is what we all produce. There's hemoglobin F, which is produced by fetal blood cells, fetal bone marrow. This is not common in adults, except in certain types of cancer. Then we have hemoglobin S, or sickle cell hemoglobin, which can turn into, which can cause sickle cell anemia in patients who don't have, or patients who have the sickle cell anemia trait. We'll talk about that a little bit more next semester when we talk about genetics. And then we have something we call hemoglobin A1C, or glycosylated hemoglobin. I think your book might call it glycated hemoglobin. Now, what does the word glyco mean? Sugar. Now, have you ever spilled Coke on the floor? Not Diet Coke, real Coke. What happens to it, even if you just wipe it up? Sticky. Okay. Now, in your blood, you've got sugar floating around. So some of that sugar is going to stick to red blood cells, to the hemoglobin, and it'll become glycosylated. So once it becomes glycosylated, it stays sticky until it dies, about 120 days. So the more blood sugar a person has in their blood, the more percentage of hemoglobin is going to become glycosylated. So we can actually use this to manage patients with diabetes to see how their long-term control is going. Because it takes 120 days to get rid of a red blood cell, you can think of A1C as kind of like an average blood sugar for the last 4 months. All right, now the next measurement of red blood cell function, so we call hematocrit. Hematocrit is the percentage of plasma and blood that is made up of by red blood cells. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a sample of blood, we're going to put it in the centrifuge, we're going to spin it down, and then we're going to measure how much of that blood volume is red blood cells. And on average, it's about 45%. Now, let me ask you this question. Why would you have changes in hematocrit? What are the two possibilities? Okay, so anemia, if you're just not producing as many red blood cells, you might have a lower hematocrit. What else could happen that would change hematocrit? Well, okay, that's losing blood cells, all right? So we can have a problem with blood cells, producing too many or too little. What else can affect hematocrit? Okay, the amount of water. So the two things can affect hematocrit. So if a person is fluid overloaded, what would we expect their hematocrit to be? Low. If a person is dehydrated, what would we expect their high? All right, so hematocrit can be a sign of hydration or a sign of red blood cell problems. So we don't want to use hematocrit by itself because you don't know which one is the problem. It could be both of the problem. But it is an indicator of red blood cell and fluid status. Now, we've got two unique properties of red blood cells that make them special. Now, what do we say is the one of the major factors in how quickly something diffuses across the membrane? Okay, concentration, and then what's next? Say again? Surface area. Now, let me ask you this question. What has more surface area? This bottom cell that's just like a little ellipse, or this top cell which has the sides pushed in? The top one. So red blood cells are shaped like this. They're shaped kind of like a button that has an indentation in the top and the bottom. When you look at it from the side, it looks like this. Now, the reason they have that is so that they have more surface area, so the oxygen can diffuse across that cell membrane more quickly. The other nice thing that this does is this part acts kind of like a hinge. So as it squeezes through arteries or through capillaries, the capillaries are actually smaller than this. So what it can do is it can fold, push through, and then pop out on the other side. So we call that reversible deformity. And this shape we call biconcave, because it's concave on both sides. All right, next let's talk about white blood cells. White blood cells make up somewhere between 5,000 to 10,000 per millimeter cubed, which is a very, very tiny amount of blood. The final destination is going to be, what's the final destination of white blood cells? Say again? Okay, they might be destroyed. What are they doing in the blood? What?
Immunity.
Okay, immunity, but do they work in the blood? Where do they work mostly? In tissues. So really, they're just using blood as a transportation system to get to their final destination. So what are the places that white blood cells really live and work? What kind of tissue? Lymph, what?
Lymphatic
tissues like the lymph nodes, spleen, and what else? The alts. Do you remember what the alts are? They're epithelial-associated lymphoid tissue, ALT. So gut-associated lymphoid tissue, bronchial, you know, wherever you have an opening in the body, you're going to have those alts, the associated lymphoid tissues. All right, let's talk about the breakdown. When we can measure the total number, and we just call that a white blood cell count, or a WBC. Then we can also break that down into the different kinds of white blood cells. We call that a differential. So a differential usually breaks down into these five, sometimes more, but usually these five white blood cell types. So under granulocytes, we have three types. We have neutrophils, eosinophils, and basophils. We'll talk about them in a little bit more detail in a moment. Then we have the monocyte macrophages. Now, what's being measured in blood, the monocytes or the macrophages? What's the mature active form? Macrophages. So what's the immature form? Monocytes. Which one is in blood? Monocytes. So remember, they're kind of, who here has seen Transformers? Okay, so they're in their car form until they get out into the tissue, and then they transform into the robot form to fight. I'll have to bring in a clip, maybe. Then we have lymphocytes. And what are the two kinds of lymphocytes? Okay, B and T cells. Yes, you guys don't shut down on me now. B and T cells. B cells produce antibody, and T cells, well, they become either killer or helper. All right, now, these lymphocytes that are floating around in your blood are mostly naive lymphocytes. All right, when we check white blood cell counts, if they're high, what's the number one thing you should think? Infection. So if they're high, you automatically think?
Infection.
Or it could be infection. Now, in the breakdown, the first one we talk about is neutrophils. Neutrophils are the most numerous, and we usually report differential white blood cells in percentages. So about 57 to 67% of your white blood cell count is neutrophils. Now, we've got a couple different kinds of neutrophils. Now, if you look at neutrophils under a microscope, their nucleus is kind of like funky looking. And so we call it polymorphonuclear because it is many-shaped nucleus. So polymorphonuclear means many-shaped nucleus, but we usually just call them polys for short. So if you hear someone say their poly count is, you know that they're really talking about neutrophils. If you hear someone say they've got neutropenia, you know that they're neutrophils are low. If you hear someone say, oh, they've got neutrophilia, that would mean neutrophils are high. Now, we break down neutrophils into three subtypes. Segmented are adult neutrophils. Bands are immature but functional. And blasts are immature and non-functional. Now, blasts are hardly ever seen. The only time you're going to see them is really two situations. Okay, three. One is bone marrow destruction, when they just get released into the tissue. Like if you had a huge trauma, or they had multiple broken bones, you might see blasts in that situation. But the more common causes are going to be leukemia and rheumatoid diseases. So those are really the only times you should ever see blasts in the blood. Now, ordinarily, you do have some bands, but you have mostly segmented. Now, how many of you ever seen Saving Private Ryan? Okay, now, in World War II, we had the Allies versus the Axis. And the Axis was made up of Germany, Italy, and Japan. Okay. Looks like some of us need to go back and take world history again. So we had Germany, Italy, and Japan. Now, towards the end of the war, what happened was some of the Russians or Soviet soldiers started saying, you know, I knew we were winning because when we would kill a German soldier, in his kit bag, there would be no razor. Now, you want to know why there was no razor? No, because the soldiers were just teenagers at that point. They didn't need razors because they couldn't grow beards yet. So at that point, Germany had been drained of adults who could serve in the army, and now they were sending their teenagers off to fight. Now, you can think of that here with your blood. The segmented cells are the adult cells. They're the ones that are meant to fight bacteria. But if there's a bacterial infection that goes on for long enough or is severe enough, you'll begin to get more bands being released, more immature cells that can fight, but they're not fully mature. So if we have an increase in segments only, we call that a shift to the right. If we have an increase in bands, we call that a shift to the left. So I want you to think about it this way, because this might help you remember which way it shifts, because you will need to remember those terms. They'll appear on a test, and you'll also see them hear them when you go to the hospital. All right, so what produces white blood cells to begin with?